and the traumatic liaison at the South African Jewish Board of Deputies, and I'm sincere and honoured to be participating in the meeting today, and to really thank you very much also to the staff for making me feel so welcome as an observer when I've come in the capacity of a South African citizen to come in to observe and to learn in these meetings. And it's been it's changed my whole perspective in terms of how government interacts with other countries, and I've been here for the foreign delegations of the UK and Indonesia, and also just to really witness our democracy in action in this committee, that you know this committee is willing to listen to all voices across the board from all perspectives, and that's so admirable. And as a South African citizen and a young person, it's just incredible to be able to see this in action in our parliament, and it really feels like a parliament of the people, and I've always felt very welcome just as a stakeholder to be sitting in on these meetings. So just to thank you for this opportunity to also hear from us as a minority community, South African Jewish community in this country. And the South African Jewish Board of Deputies, we are the representative body that interfaces with government and civil society on behalf of the South African Jewish community. And just as we would bring our Jewish Board of Education to a committee on education, or our community security organization on a committee with security, we brought the relevant community organizations that can speak directly to the points that were raised in our letter, and to respond to also references that were made to our community in this committee. So I have with us in this delegation, we have our national chairperson, Mary Klook, the president of the South African Jewish Board of Deputies, coming in from KZN. We have the chairperson of the Cape Town branch of the South African Zionist Federation, Roman Sullivan. We have Benji Shulman from the Jewish National Fund. We have Jamie Marty from the South African Friends of Israel. And that is going to be our presentation. So thank you very much for listening to our communal representatives in terms of just to express our perspectives, our concerns, our hopes, our input as a community. And we just look forward to having the opportunity to engage with our government.
Thank you very much.
So, Honourable Chairperson, and we have a slide presentation, if I could speak to that, and somebody much younger and clever as far as technology is going to manage the actual slide. But as Kaya mentioned, the South African Jewish Board of Deputies, we're a democratically elected organization. The lay leadership are democratically elected, and the organization is 113 years old, pretty much similar to the ANC. And as Kaya mentioned, we are the interface between our community and broader society, including government and civil society. And we interact on all issues that affect us as South African Jews. So, for example, hate, but also social cohesion, xenophobia, economic development, all those issues as South Africans we're involved with. This year is the 175th anniversary of the South African Jewish community. So the first congregation of Jews assembled up the road here at what is known as Gardens Synagogue. It was a much smaller space in those days, but 175 years ago. So as an organized community, we are commemorating and celebrating 175 years of commitment and passion to be part of, and particularly the new South Africa. This slide is a slide that, can we have one before, sorry, that particular slide is a beautiful slide that the man being carried is a man by the name of Izzy Maisels. He was the head of the defense team in the treason trial, a pillar of our community at the time, and just to reflect the role of individuals and different Jewish organizations in the commitment and building of South Africa. So, as committed as we are, and I was born in this country, this is home, my children live here, when the Kaplan Center did a study, and the Kaplan Center at UCT, it was overwhelming that 86% of South African Jews expressed a connection to Israel. So just as Catholics have some connection to the Vatican, and I guess the Hellenic community have some affinity with Greece, the importance of Israel in the lives of Jews cannot be understated as the spiritual home, etc. But it needs to be made absolutely clear that as South Africans, and I can speak for myself and for the majority of the South African Jewish community, we've been born here. Many South African Jews are third, fourth, fifth generation. As I said, it's a 175-year history. And the commitment to South Africa is in no way compromised by a spiritual affinity with Israel. So why are we here and what are our concerns? And I think your introduction, Honourable Chair, was around some of the insecurities that we might have about the presentations that have been made to this committee, etc. The major threat that is the most distressing phenomenon for our community is where supposedly legitimate criticism of the government of Israel by organizations and individuals very quickly unravels into what is the new word being used by internationally, Jew hatred. And these particular pictures on the slide were in response to Israel apartheid week on Wits campus, where university students were asked to come and express their frustration around Israel apartheid week. And what began with their frustrations with Israeli government policy, within 24 hours was these slides about Jews. The difficulty for the South African Jewish community, who, as I've already explained, have a deep love for the State of Israel, to confront the fact that there are issues that need to be addressed, and I think the South African model of dialogue, 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 wherever there are issues to be expressed or frustrations within parts of our South African community about international relations or matters of Israeli government, it's always incredibly important that we dialogue and we don't end up with graffiti such as is in that slide. When you start with rhetoric that has supposedly anti-Israel and it then degenerates into anti-Jewish vitriol and Jew hatred, it's very, very difficult for South African Jewish community. So here's an example, again, of South Africans being pushed around and told they're not welcome in a protest outside a conference in Sandton last year. Now, once again, as South Africans and South African Jews, it's really, really tough when you're made to feel unwelcome in your own country. And as I said earlier, the model that we have as South Africans and that we have lived through to transform into this magnificent democracy, not without its challenges, but magnificent nonetheless, it's very difficult to, 20 years later, be confronted with the fact that we don't feel welcome because we might hold different views from our fellow South Africans. And instead of exporting the South African model, we're importing the conflict onto our pavements between one another, which is problematic for the Jewish community, as I said. So, in particular, I want to dwell for a few minutes on the organization BDS, which I guess is known to this committee, but the Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions Campaign against Israel. What we've come to understand is that BDS is unfortunately largely, and in most cases, anti-Semitic. Anti-Semitic and anti-Semitism. And unfortunately, these are the manifestations of what is supposed to be an issue around Israel, where the chairperson and spokesman of BDS justified the singing of Shoot the Jew by BDS protesters outside of it, where an anti-Woolworths campaign, a pig's head, and there's a photograph of a pig's head, and I'm sure you all understand that the Jewish religion, like the Muslim religion, forbid the consumption of pork and pig products. So the pig's head is placed on a supposed kosher shelf in Woolworths. Honourable Chairperson, that has nothing to do with Israel. That has to do with demonizing Jews. and making a point about Jude that has got nothing to do with international relations, a pig's head. BDS boycotts of Jewish business and business people, South African business, South Africans, your fellow South Africans, denying your fellow South Africans an opportunity to earn a living because you don't share the same political viewpoint, that's not the South African way that we understand. That's not the way that we as a country came to the place we are today. And then sadly, the Jewish students being sworn at and called effing Jews at BDS Israel Apartheid Week events, and called in my own hometown at the Durham University of Technology a petition brought to the Vice Chancellor asking for Jews to be thrown out of the university. That's anti-Semitism. And regrettably, that incident that happened at DUT happened the day after BDS had a rally and had invited a Palestinian activist to come and speak on campus. We had been to see the Vice Chancellor before to say this could precipitate some unpleasantness on campus. We had never any idea or imagined that that unpleasantness could actually be that the students would call and the SRC would actually call for Jews to be expelled. So South African Jews for Free Palestine. I just want to acknowledge that there are a handful of members of our community who identify with the BDS hate, and I think it's important that we, at the outset, make it abundantly clear that we absolutely respect their opinion, their right to their opinion. That's the beauty of the country we live in. We're all entitled not only to have an opinion, but to express it in public without fear that that opinion will be in any way bring us any problems. But what needs to be made, the point that I made earlier, is that 86% in the Kaplan Centre study, but the vast majority of not only South African Jews, but Jews globally, have an affinity and a deep love for the State of Israel. And yes, there are people, as I said to you, this group of South African Jews, what concerns us is that there is some sense that by pushing a Jewish person or a person of Jewish heritage to the front of a protest on behalf of BDS, is it with the express intention of manipulating the facts. Can we show this video where it will pretty much self-explanatory, thank you. Just making the point that I've made earlier. sure you can understand how hatred of South African Jews is not going to solve the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. All it does is cause polarization and division among fellow South Africans. As South African citizens, we too are entitled to protection by our constitution. The Bill of Rights clearly states that all South Africans are entitled to the freedom of religion, belief and opinion, freedom of expression, freedom of association, and we're entitled to these views without being intimidated and threatened by anti-Israel lobby groups. I think that's the point we've come here to make as South Africans. The really important discussion around the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is that the option on the table is a two-state solution. The South African Jewish Board of Deputies is deeply committed to a two-state solution with a viable Palestinian and Israeli land and country living side by side with secure borders. We've worked constructively with President Zuma, his envoys, we continue to work with them constantly, with Durko, and we'll continue to do whatever we can to play a constructive role in any of these initiatives, constructive initiatives. And one of the examples is that I was at the meeting when Mahmoud Abbas came to South Africa and the South African government asked us, would we meet with him? He said, of course we'd meet with him. We'll meet with anybody to do whatever we can to bring constructive outcomes to this tragic conflict. So the point is, and I think that's the point we all understand, that our government is uniquely placed to play a really important role in resolving this conflict. We have an example that has been a beacon of light to the world. And the encouraging of dialogue and negotiation between the parties is what we know the South African government believes in, and we're encouraging that role rather than that hideous video that you watched. As Max Maharaj, the CODESA Secretariat member, said, one needs to talk and talk and talk some more. The only parties that can find a resolution are the Israelis and the Palestinians themselves. South Africa can play a role, but in encouraging dialogue and helping the parties understand each other's insecurities and concerns. Punitive measures, as suggested on Wednesday in this room, will only drive the parties further apart. As proud South African Jews, we remain committed to assisting our government in working with the parties to find a resolution to this complex impasse through any constructive means. As the Honourable Chairman said, that in September and a couple of days ago, this committee entertained a succession of anti-Israel advocacy groups, some of which we believe have a distinct anti-Semitic agenda. We really appreciate the opportunity to provide some other perspectives on this issue that you raised. And as Kaya said, Rowan will now address the committee, as well as Benji and Jamie thereafter. Thank you very much for this opportunity, Chairman Masangu.
Honourable Chairperson, honourable members, my name is Rowan Pollivan. I'm the chairperson of the South African Zionist Federation Cape Council, and it is a great honour and privilege to be given the opportunity to speak to you. Rowan Pollivan, yes. And thank you very much for giving us a voice and for listening to us, and we really appreciate being here. As you heard with Mary's talk, we are South African Jews. We have a complex but very strong identity. We are, first of all, we South Africans. We are committed to this country. We have a very proud and illustrious history in this country, making enormous contributions economically, politically, and in all spheres of civic life. And we hope that this will continue in a long time towards in the future. But we're also Jews. We are a minority group who represent only 0.1% of the entire South African population. But as South African Jews, we have several capitals. Our executive capital is Pretoria. Our judicial capital is Bloemfontein. Our legislative capital is right here in Cape Town. But our spiritual capital is Jerusalem. Jerusalem is the holy city, part of our holy land of Israel, where we have had an unbreakable connection for over 3,000 years. For over 3,000 years, Jews have had a spiritual, religious, and historical bond to this land, to the land of Israel. And another synonym, when we think of Jerusalem, a synonym that is often used is the word Zion. Zion is another word for Jerusalem. And that is effectively where the word Zionism comes from. It comes from an internal connection where we believe that Jews have a right to self-determination in our ancestral homeland. And that is really the essence of the word Zionism. And sometimes you hear the word Zionism misused or misappropriated in different aspects. And we as South African Jews, we certainly know what the word Zionism means, and we certainly see the most positive of positive lights. Given our troubled history over 3,500 years, culminating in the worst event in human history, the Holocaust, where over 6 million Jews perished, and Israel is a homeland and a place of refuge for Jews around the world. However, we as the South African Jewish community strongly, strongly support, and we echo the South African government's position of a two-state solution. And we strongly believe that there should be two states existing in harmony and peace side by side, where that will be achieved only through difficult negotiation, discussion, dialogue, and compromise, painful compromise between both sides. And we believe that Israel has already proven its ability to make peace. It's proven its commitment. Really, Israel has, in the past and will go into the future, is more than willing, to give up land in the pursuit of peace. I'll give you two examples. One, what happened when Israel gave Sinai, which is an area three times the size of Israel, but gave it to Egypt in the pursuit of peace, and thank God, made peace with Egypt. In 2005, Israel unilaterally withdrew from Gaza as a peace offering, and completely evacuated all the settlements in Gaza as an offering for peace. And I know that the issue of settlements has come up, and there are certain settlement blocks that in any kind of framework will most likely remain in Israel, and some will be dismantled, and Israel has shown its ability to achieve peace, and certainly it's in our interests and in everyone's interests to have direct dialogue, direct negotiations between the Israelis and the Palestinians. We certainly support that, as long as both countries can have secure borders and can exist peacefully and in harmony with each other. And we believe that enormous benefits can come to both countries if there is peace. We also recognize that Israel is a very vibrant democracy with many different positions, just like in the South African Jewish community, from the left, from the center, from the right. But the overriding principle is that we believe that Israel has a right to exist. Israel has a right to exist, and has a right to exist alongside a potential future Palestinian state. Just briefly, I want to talk about some other areas that we believe Israel and South Africa could really work together. And it really comes with having an open relationship between the two countries. I know that the issue of water has come up in the past. Well, South Africa, as we all know, is experiencing quite a serious water crisis. Israel, not too long ago, experienced her own water crisis. And within a very few short period of time, Israel miraculously not only solved her water crisis, but is now able to export water to her neighbors, an incredible gesture. And we strongly believe that it would be a phenomenal privilege and opportunity if Israel could share that technology, share its ingenuity, share its innovation with South Africa to really help towards working and solving our own water crisis. And we really believe Israel can offer that. Another issue that I believe has come up is the idea that there's a circumcision device. I know it was mentioned the other day. This is the only device, the only non-surgical circumcision device that has been approved by the World Health Organization. If we brought that into South Africa tomorrow, it would save potentially thousands of lives. And it doesn't really matter which country it comes from, but the essence of it is an Israeli technology that originates in Israel, and it would be really brilliant and remarkable if South Africa could incorporate that. Another issue, as we know, is the issue of HIV/AIDS, a huge issue in South Africa, and I was very pleased to read really recently that researchers from the Hebrew University of Jerusalem have most likely come up with a potential cure for this terrible disease, and they have been busy doing tests and trials. They have found out that if they inject this new drug that they've developed into the blood cell of an HIV virus infected patient, within 8 days, 97% of the HIV virus is killed in the blood cells. So we are, please God, hoping that in the future, when that comes into fruition, we can share that, Israel will be able to share that miraculous technology with South Africa. So to close, I just want to reiterate that as the South African Jewish community, we are very proud to be here, we're very proud to make this contribution, and we want to contribute to the democracy in South Africa and help the South African government work towards peace with Israel's neighbours, as Israel has shown to do. I thank you very much. It's been a real honour to speak today, and I believe that Benji Shulman from the Jewish National Fund will be following me.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable members, thank you very much for your time. It's a great honour and pleasure to be speaking to you today. I'm just waiting for my presentation to be uploaded, and then I will start. Just a quick correction. I'm not in fact from the Jewish National Fund. I'm from the South Africa Israel Forum, and perhaps in the next slide, I'll just briefly introduce myself. But the reason that I was encouraged to come and speak to you today is because in one of the presentations there was a question around the issue of land in the Middle East conflict and what does that mean, and particularly around the Jewish National Fund and what does that mean. So I'm just going to present on that so that you can get a clear easy context about this particular issue. So next slide, please. So just to introduce myself, why am I particularly interested in this issue? The first is I have a master's degree in geography, with a particular focus on the politics of land development, so I'm very engaged in the land issue. I've also worked extensively on peace and engagement work around the world, and particularly with the Israelis and the Palestinians, and I'll show some of that in a minute. And I've also, for a time, worked at the Jewish National Fund Walter Sisulu Environmental Center, which is a center in Mamelodi that helps about 200,000 kids a year with environmental education in underprivileged places. I've been to Israel and Palestine more than 10 times. I have met with multiple parties. Just some brief pictures. At the top left-hand corner, that is the Palestinian embassy, and that is the late Palestinian ambassador, Ali Halima, who I helped bring to this campus. It was the first time ever that he had spoken to a Jewish audience on a BITS campus. To your right, that's a Jewish and Arab joint soccer team that I was privileged to bring out, help to bring out to South Africa to learn about non-racialism from our South African counterparts and soccer teams. The other one is just me carrying a tree because I'm an environmentalist. And then you'll see on the bottom left-hand corner is the J.A. Walter Sisulu Environmental Center. It may be of interest to the chair to know that the reason it was called that was because of the long-standing relationship with Walter Sisulu with the Jewish community and in honor of his tour to Israel in the 1960s. So what is the role of land in the Middle East? So what you'll find is that this is a very, very complicated conflict. Honorable members, you'll find ethnicity, religion, geopolitics, history, all fitting into this particular problem and creating many problems. Interestingly, one of the things it isn't about is race. But that perhaps talk for another time. As I say, land is a very important factor, and the reason is that the area is very small. Rowan, if you could just put the next one, please. Just to give you a quick sense, that's actually where Israel sits in the region of the MENA region, the Middle East and Africa region, so you can see that when people find it, it's really over a very small size. If you see in the next slide, you can actually see a bit better. If you see the between the dark blue and the light blue, the one is the ocean and the other one is the West Bank and then Israel, that at the narrowest part is approximately 15 kilometers. So So I'm a bit of a Gautenger, I apologize for the analogy, but in effect, the smallest part of Israel is between Johannesburg to Sandton. That's how you can see it. And in fact, you can see the whole country from certain parts. I was privileged to go up. If you look at the top of the map, you'll see it says the Golan Heights in Syria. And I went up there on a tour recently, and they showed me over the border to what used to be a Syrian military base. And if you look through the binoculars, you can actually see the ISIS flag waving from where it says it's Syria. So when people get very excited about the land question, it's often in reference to the fact that there's not a lot of it, and trades in land and these sorts of things, despite the obvious connections around religion and the importance of all different religions and history, but it's just very small, and that tends to inflame passions perhaps more than in other conflicts. Just to explain in the next slide the Jewish connection to the land, there you'll see a map showing the presence of King David, King David's kingdom in the area. You can see it extended far beyond what is currently modern Israel. King David was in that area for 3,000 years ago, and I'm sure you would have heard in various presentations the city of Hebron. And the city of Hebron is a very, one of the most divisive parts of this entire conflict, but you'll actually find that there's been an unbroken Jewish connection and living presence in Hebron for 3,000 years, right up until 1929, when the inhabitants were unfortunately massacred in a protest, if you like. So that's just to give you a sense of how long Jews have been living in the land before the modern era, before I go on. So to just give an idea about where does the Jewish National Front come from, there was an exile of Jews for about 2,000 years, and as I said, there was still a sizable population, but in the late 1800s, a group of Jews decided that it was important that they begin to develop the land. A lot of them lived in cities like Jerusalem and Tel Aviv, Haifa, but they decided that if you want to really develop, you've got to go to the rural areas. And there were many landowners at the time. Many churches owned land, private persons, many Arab people owned lands, communal areas, and that whole area was run by the Turkish Empire at the time. And I think that many of the honourable members would perhaps be sympathetic to the idea that you can't develop a country unless you have actual ownership. So what these Jews did is they created something called the Jewish National Fund, which is exactly that, a fund, which the purpose was to buy and develop land for community uses. You can just give a thing so that perhaps the honourable members will be aware of the idea of redistribution without compensation. Well, the Jews, we had a slightly different approach. We decided on land redistribution with compensation. And what would happen is that Jews all around the world, you would have a box like this in your house. These were ubiquitous in the last sort of 100 years. And whenever every sort of Sabbath or tithing or anything like that, people would put money in those boxes, and the boxes would be collected up to go towards money for the fund so that people could buy land. And the land was sold willingly by Arab landowners. They owned much of the land, and they were given more than fair value for the money, for the land, and they sold them. They often didn't want to buy the prime land. They bought swamp and desert and areas which were neglected in the country. And those were then developed by the Jewish National Fund to help, develop the area. Now, just to give you a sense of how big and important this project was to Jews all around the world, there's a Holocaust survivor in our community. His name is Don Kraus, and his house was firebombed in the Second World War. And because it was firebombed, there was nothing left of his house. And when they were digging through the debris, they actually found one of these tins that had been destroyed by the fire, but had been melted to such an extent that it was just a glob of metal because there was money inside. And the only thing that he took from his house to the safe house was this box, because it represented the hopes and dreams of people wanting to develop the land as an indigenous people. And right up until his whole family was murdered by the Nazis, this was the thing that he held onto as a Jewish community. So it's really a very important part of the Jewish identity. come to the next slide, please. Once the land was bought, obviously it was then they tried to develop it. So Israel is very famous for having planted 240 million trees in the last 100 years. Much of that supported by Jews around the world, buying trees that could be planted. They do agricultural support and research. Obviously, Israel being a desert, anti-desertification initiatives are very important. Water-saving initiatives, creation of recreational spaces, renewable energy and desalination are all driven through this organization. However, what I'd like to point out, which I think is very important, is it doesn't just stop at Israel, or in fact the Jewish community. The JNF is recognized by the UN with NGO status in forestry. They do a lot of work with the Chinese, which of course is one of our BRICS partners, doing forestry transfer knowledge. They work with the Rwandan government on creating renewable energy, water projects, another BRICS country, India, US, Canada, Australia, all turn to Israel for water technology. There's a long and strong association with Kenya. And one of the more interesting developments, which I'll get to in a moment, is the training of Palestinian foresters in fighting forest fires. And I'll come to that in a moment. It's interesting that former vice president candidate Al Gore has said that the Jewish National Fund model for all-day forestry is something that should be copied around the world by all countries. That is how successful this project has been. So I know there was some concern that Israeli technology is somehow being used as a way to leverage different countries into a position. However, I just wanted to show you something here which I thought was quite interesting. This is the Ivory Coast. On the left you'll see here the first president of the Ivory Coast planting, helping to plant a forest in Israel and going on a forestry knowledge transfer delegation. That was in 1962. And you'll see on your right the current president of the Ivory Coast doing exactly the same thing. So these are very long and strong associations and have many engagements, particularly on the African continent. If you look the work of the Palestinian, I found this particularly interesting because this newspaper headline is from the Israeli newspaper Haaretz, and you'll find that it was printed yesterday, right? Perhaps the honorable members are aware that there's a terrible fire, forest fire like we have here in the Western Cape, occasionally that is busy blazing through Israel, and very thankfully other countries have gotten involved to assist and support the fire and fight it. And you'll see here that Israel has accepted the help of the Palestinian firefighters, and the reason for that is because they've been trained by the JNF. And I just want to say that I have friends who live in Haifa, which is one of the cities that is under attack by the fires, and I can't tell you how much goodwill this kind of work generates, because when a Palestinian comes to your house and puts out a fire that's about to destroy your house, that is really creates amazing goodwill and is a real viable way to create peace, because you know people see that everyone has common interest to deal with these sorts of problems collectively. Moving on to just South Africa, the JNF is active in South Africa. The JNF has supported the forestry industry extensively by providing a gall wasp killing army. It's a technical term, but basically we have a problem in this country where much of our forestry is under assault by a little worm thing that like eats our trees, and then obviously people don't have drugs and they can't create high quality trees. So the Israelis have developed a wasp that eats the larvae in effect, and that helps to stop the rotting of the trees. There's also a lot of agricultural NGOs that get supported in crop management. They fund conferences highlighting the issues of water technology, which is a key thing in our context, and has also supported education of disadvantaged South Africans with environmental centres in Gauteng, KZN, and in fact the Western Cape as well. This is the most famous one. This is the JNF, Walter Sisulu Environmental Centre in Mamelodi, which I mentioned before, and it does a variety of things. It's planted 20,000 trees on the same model of Israel, but in Mamelodi, creating a green campus. And it was opened by our beloved dear President Nelson Mandela and Khadr Asmal, and there you can see the former Chief Rabbi Cyril Harris. And on the left is Master Sisulu and a much younger version of Shaka Sisulu, as well as the late Helen Sussman, all going and opening the centre And then this is just the local community, that is the Mamelodi Record newspaper, just talking about the schools that are benefiting from the work of the JNF. That completes my presentation. If there are any other questions, I'm very happy to take them, but I do hope that this has given you a greater context into some of the land issues, and particularly the JNF. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schulman. Thank you very much. There are no further presentations.
There's one more chair.
Oh. Over to you.
Good afternoon, Chairperson. My name is Jamie Mighty. I'm a director at the South African Friends of Israel. I've been tasked to call to the attention of this committee that there exists a community of South Africans. They exist a community of people who...
Jimmy?
Yes, Chairperson. Mighty. M-I-T-H-I.
Mighty?
Yes, that's how it's pronounced, yes.
Why do we do anything? Mighty, that's the motto.
Well, it's always interesting discourse. We'll offline that one.
No, I definitely won't put all.
I'll just leave it as it is. So, Chair, I've been tasked to call to attention of this committee that there exists a body of South Africans who want to develop strong relationships with the State of Israel and who have strong relationships with the State of Israel. And this stems from many sources, one of which is that Israel, Jerusalem more specifically, and if you consider the status of Jerusalem to a large body of South Africans, it is also a holy site to them, because that is the capital of David, that is where Jesus walked, that is where significant spiritual events occurred in the life of Jesus Christ. And South Africa has a large community of Christians who do recognize the value, the historical significance, and do have an attachment to Jerusalem from a spiritual context. And as such, they have ties with Israel, and they want to continue to see South Africa nurturing a relationship with Israel. But there's also a community of South Africans who are interested in Israel from an economic perspective. Because when we hear about the conversation in Africa broadly, but more specifically in South Africa, we hear a lot about inequality, poverty, and unemployment. And when we look at the case study, if we're doing an MBA right now, Israel is an excellent case study in how to create effective startups and to improve the economic conditions of a state through entrepreneurship. So part of our constituency is young South Africans who are interested in looking to the examples of Israeli startups specifically. I'm not sure if you're an avid user of apps, but one of the most prolific apps which is being used for mapping right now is an app called Waze. At a time when people thought that mapping had been a saturated market, there was Apple Maps, there was Google Maps, there was even Nokia Maps at one stage, it didn't seem foreseeable that there could be a new entrant into navigation at that stage. It seemed as if the market was full and there was no room for a small player to emerge. But what we've actually seen right now, the most popular and most loved app which is being used around the world in terms of mapping technology is Waze, because it can help you avoid traffic and those kind of things. So when we look at companies such as Waze, we're not interested specifically with the fact that it's a mapping app, but how a young state with limited resources was able to facilitate young people to be able to create a very vibrant company. We need to see this kind of companies as South Africans coming out of our home base. We also want to have the Waze. We also want to create USBs and all of this other technology which is coming out of Israel. So there are many young South Africans who are looking to Israel from an MBA perspective to say, what can be learned? What can be gathered? What information can be brought into South Africa so that we can replicate those same results? So it is that community that I've come to represent and to articulate their voice. It's a community that believes that there is an emphasis there is an importance in dialogue and engagement for the creation of effective collaboration. So when you look around the world, statehood is very complicated, and especially statehood in the Middle East. We don't ignore the challenges that exist with being a democracy in the Middle East. We don't ignore the challenges that exist with being a democracy with a different faith-based system within the Middle East. But what we recommend is that states do interact and collaborate in spite of the differences and challenges that exist. South Africa is a state that has been able to interact with both the Democratic Republic of Congo, Russia, Zimbabwe, and the United States of America whilst maintaining a relationship with China. That just shows that South Africa is a state that is cognizant of the complexities and the diplomatic intricacies that exist when interacting with a plethora of states. And it is our view and it is our plea to this commission, this committee, that that perspective be maintained in relationship with Israel. When we consider the historical and religious significance that Israel has in the eyes of our people, in the eyes of the people who have an attachment to Jerusalem, who have an attachment to the holy site that exists in Israel, but pursuant to that, in the eyes of young people who are seeking to learn how to create viable entrepreneurial projects, we understand that we have been saved by the Israeli ambassador and many other state actors from Israel, that there is a keen desire to bring that entrepreneurial mindset, to bring that entrepreneurial skills base to South Africa, to elevate and contribute here. And we also think that the Jewish community is currently doing a significant deal of work to facilitate the creation of startups, to facilitate the creation of entrepreneurial projects. Lastly, we want to talk about how the South African Friends of Israel have been able to create collaborative efforts within South African communities. For example, there are two clinics which have been built in KZN, Durban specifically, which deal one with reproductive male health and another which is a general clinic. And those clinics were able to be built through the efforts of South African Friends of Israel, the local Jewish community, and the communities of Israelis in Israel. It's a community-based project, and it was able to actually help alleviating the majority of healthcare problems that we see in society. So ours is just to contribute that we do think that Israel has a lot to contribute to the South African community, that the Jewish community itself has a lot to contribute, and as such, we are proactively seeking to build relationships both with the Jewish state, but also with the Jewish community. And it's our view that we need to view the Jewish community as South Africans first and foremost, and extend to them the same respect, dialogue, and courtesy that we extend to all South Africans. It is our broader view that the South African project is one of the best examples of how to resolve difficult, intricate challenges around the world. So we think that dialogue, engagement, reaching out to the other side is something that has been embodied by the ANC, embodied by Nelson Mandela, embodied by the Republic of South Africa. It's not for nothing that people look to South Africa in Africa as an example of democracy. The conversations we're having here today can never be held anywhere else in Africa. And it is because of that we believe that this committee must continue to extend that same culture of dialogue and engagement. And we are very grateful to you today for having heard us out. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Mighty. Now, members, I will allow you for comments and questions if there are any.
Hello. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair, and let me thank also our guests. The South African Jewish Board. I think the consensus that we have is that the Middle East conflict can only be sorted out if we all come together. And I think us as public reps, we are duty bound definitely to listen to all aspects and all civil society. and we definitely are looking forward to working with you to solve this complicated conflict. And just one thing that I would want to ask you as I'm leaving is, as a South African Jewish body, what active steps are you doing to ensure that you promote the two-state solution? Often people are talking about peace and justice and reconciliation and non-violence, but there is nothing proactively that is being done to talk and about the solution of a two-state solution. So what, how are you coming out to demystify yourself? And I think you've done a good presentation today in trying to educate, but you need to do more in order to ensure that there is demystification. And I think the president, you have referred to the issue of insecurity. I find that I've listened to you and I've listened to the South African National Coalition on Palestine, and most of the time the issue is just insecurity. It's a trust deficit between the two sides. How are you going to proactively build the trust to engage with a solution? And the solution being a two-state solution. Thank you very much.
Gracias. not complete without the freedom of Palestine. I think he believes in that. Even my Christian brother, they are Christian also, believe in that. And if we, and I think really, if we believe in those values, we will ensure that, you know, there is peace, conflict resolution between Palestine and Israel, two states. I think here we should not be one-sided. We should really be holistic when we come on issues. And we had your story, we had your presentation and all, with what actually what you are doing even in the communities, and the holy place in Israel. Also, I think holiness, it talks about purity. So I'm asking that the Jewish Board of Deputies, we should be the peacemakers. We should be the one who really advocate for peace in our society. And when we look at issues, we should not be one-sided. We should really bring people together. There's one thing that I like. It says that I don't know what it is, don't let people pull you into your storm, pull them into your peace. So we should be peacemakers, especially the chairperson here, the international relation with our Ubuntu. And I think Ubuntu doesn't look at things one-sided. In a holistic way to bring two parties together and in order that we can be able to run things amicably. And some demonstrations that were done, I think it was how people tried to, you know, to express themselves. I don't think that they hate Jews. So sometimes, you know, we like to conclude. I think here, let's just go and ask why those people were doing that. It's not that the Jews hate you, why we were doing such a good thing in South Africa. So sometimes opinions and thinking can make you to think differently and think negatively. But I'm of the view that the freedom of South Africans is not complete without the freedom of the Palestinians. I think that is fairness. I thank you. Thank you.
among even among the different parties or NGOs or structures that exist in South Africa. They don't seem to have, and I don't know why, perhaps there's lack of communication, they don't seem to have a common advice that they can package and give to Palestine on the one hand, and a package that they can give to Israel on the other. Because they, the South Africans, now it doesn't matter whether they are Palestinians or they are Jews, they can interact with the situation in the Middle East, at least dispassionately. They are not immediately affected territorially speaking. They are linked to Israel because of religious or ethnic and other reasons. And so are the Palestinians that live in South Africa. But at least you can see things from the South African way and package it as well. And this, for many years that I've been an activist, well, it's not meant for the 39 years, it doesn't come across. It doesn't come across. And you see, in this way, the voice of the South Africans, the voice of the South Africans, you can look at the different political parties, you can look at the government. What will happen is that it will be suspicious of taking sides. And the request that you are making, not quite the request, but that the world does look up to South Africa, that it can assist others to bring about solutions, because it found solutions for its own problems, is actually correct, but it needs a proper historical context. That you see, the white arrived in 1952. The solution was in 1994. Israel is after 342 years. And in the intervening period, there are other distortions that have either been attended to, and I'll come back to them, or have not been attended to. So perhaps just to make my point, when there were white people in general, and the Afrikaners in particular, you must hear me well, because they are a majority, and they are the people who are an offspring from the Dutch settler who became Afrikaners in South Africa, and developed a new language, a new identity, a new something. But you see, even then, they then sense that there was less and less affinity to Holland, unlike perhaps the South African Jews. And they, among the white people, are outside the Jews and the English and others, were the ones that who felt that the struggle for the liberation of the blacks is actually an attack on them. And therefore that when you were saying, but I think this oppression is not right, then they would say it's because it's the Jews, because they flow with the Helen Suzman. And if you say so and you are Afrikaner, they say it's a Kafir booty. I'm sorry for this way. But I'm sure you know the history of the country. Now, I'm saying this because even as we discuss this matter, you have the South African Jews who are saying, what is happening in the Middle East? There are excessive things or excesses that actually should not be done in the name of the Jews. You get what I mean? That's what the South African Jews for a Free Palestine are saying on a host of things. And what this means is therefore that the South African Jews for
Free Palestine, the South African Jewish Board, the South African Friends of Israel, what Shulman was saying, don't come together and say, what can we advise the South African government to say when it comes to this question? And what can we say to Palestine when it comes to this question? In other words, then the South Africans are divided on this thing. And therefore, when you speak on this matter, we'll always either look at your religion, look at your ethnicity, look at all of these things. And these, I suspect, but I'm speaking for myself, may temper the ability of South Africa to be seen to be an honest broker. Because President Zuma comes from the ANC, the ANC has got certain positions about Palestine and about Israel, about certain things, and I must explain what I mean immediately. For instance, the ANC says there must exist a state of Israel, and it has recognition to it. That is very controversial to the BDS and others, or perhaps Hamas. And the ANC says there shall exist a state of Palestine. And you say no, or perhaps the Likud party says no, or it says it works, but in practice it does something else. Where must South Africa stand on this? So even as we say South Africa can export this solution, they don't become easy. Cook was saying that the Palestinians themselves and the Israelis must find solutions, but they must be assisted by certain countries to the extent that they can. They must be assisted by the United Nations. So I just thought I must say that. Now there are questions that I want to ask you, and it is whether you are able to provide an advice to the government of Israel about what you think should be the solutions to the Middle East question. And to what extent do you have an influence? And are you able, or have you ever, as the South African Jewish Board, ever gone to the United Nations and say, as a Jewish Board, this is what we think can come through the mouth of the United Nations. But also, because we are in South Africa, or I hope that you network with the Jews in Palestine, with the Jews in Poland, with the Jews in Germany, the Jews that can are not actually involved in Israel, but they are from outside. Let me package your advice to the UN. Let's say, if this can come through the UN, probably it must go neutral. Because if that doesn't happen, I'll tell you why I am asking this question. The advice of South Africa to the UN and to Israel will be different from that of the Jews who are in Poland, and the Jews that are in the USA, and the Jews that are in France, and the Jews that... Now, I don't think that will help Israel, and I don't think that will assist the UN. So, and you see, this matter about anti-Semitism, I don't come across this word for the first time from you. I think Khan was here, when Hamas was here, and we met in the chief of office, he did say that Hamas is wide within them, they are calling for the destruction of the state of Israel, they are anti-Semitic. That's why we were inviting us to the conference. I have put this, well, I said to them, it's a difficult question. I said to the BDS, to the National Coalition of Palestine, I asked them, I said, what would you say if the Jewish Board or any other are actually saying that you are anti-Semitic or you are anti-Jewish, whatever, or you hate the Jews? They gave different answers. Palestinian people is not to hate the Jews. And there are Jews in South Africa, and there are Jews inside Israel that feel the same. So it surely, in their view, can't be anti-Semitic. You see what I mean? And here, when you are making a presentation, you're making it very difficult either for us or for some when you say these people are or could be anti-Semitic. And again, the South African experience comes into place. Because, and again, I will use Afghanistan, that sometimes they were feeling that things like this, the fight for freedom, etc., was actually to be anti-Afghanistan. I remember how one of them was saying, you know, the Jewadim, meaning the Jews, if things are very difficult, they will go home. And the English, they even have more hopes. New Zealand, Australia, USA, Britain. And the Afrikaner has no hope. So we are going to fight the last man. If you read our history, this is what came across. Now, you see that siege mentality led to excesses. But the engagement, the negotiations, actually made them realize, especially from 1985, that we didn't know that the, in fact, the AIDS and the blacks can actually be so reasonable. And I think even for the ANC in general, the blacks also had to accept that although the white people are right, but you must settle with them here. If you think one day you will remove them, you're not going to do that. The UN will come in. And it doesn't come to me, it doesn't occur to me that in areas where the Israeli people were given land, and according to the Palestinians, this was their land. The Palestinians want to settle for the fact that, look, forgive and forget, but apologize to us or pay us, and let's accept that this part is for the Jews. And then this, and if there was a path that was taken by the Palestinians, that this, the Israelites must then say, or the Jews must say, this path is for the Palestinians, then we would understand what they mean by peaceful coexistence. But if peaceful coexistence is the extinction of the Arab, as South African or government or parliament, we will wash our hands of this man. Because our view is, there must exist. And let me just come to the contentious two-state solution. You know what we have come across? I had a discussion with the ambassador there. We had a discussion with the BDS. We had a discussion with the National Coalition for Palestine. There is a view that whereas Israel, that is coming, says it is, and I read the speech of Prime Minister Netanyahu, by the way, the ambassador also gave it. So it does say Israel is committed to the two-state solution, which we are committed to in South Africa. And I think that's the instruction that the President gave to the two end points. But I want to tell you where the challenge is so that you can also advance. It is that the Palestinians are saying, word of mouth of official policy says committed to the two-state solution, but there are settlements, there are encroachments gradually getting into the Palestinian territory, particularly in West Bank and East Jerusalem. And why in East Jerusalem? Because they, the Palestinians, lay claim to that. They think that an ultimate free Palestine has a East Jerusalem. Israel or the Jews, they feel that an ultimate free or whatever, the ultimate existence of the Jewish state is when it has East Jerusalem. And it seems this contentious issue about this one saying Jerusalem and this one saying Jerusalem
is not being solved by the two, or they are not inviting the UN for adjudication, how are South Africans going to say what must happen here? Because these are things, you know, when we say we are fulfilled, we must get our home, and this one thing. Well, I know that there are black South Africans, I'm a good manager. I'll come back to it. But the point I'm making, I'm putting to you, is that there must be a discussion between the two and under the auspices of the UN, how they can share this. But secondly, there is a concern that while officially this has been said, almost 500,000. Now, I'm speaking about what other people have said. Now, they may have been misleading us. Might be a lobby, might be their propaganda. They say, as we speak, 500,000 people are being gradually settled. And in fact, there was a person who was giving me some African experience, if I can just share that with you. That when the whites arrived here, in the Cape Plateau, the first people they fought with were the quiet. And if they fought over land, they didn't have that land. But they all fought over land. There was no land that came from the ship. Then the next thing, it was moving towards the, what is now is called the Eastern Cape. That is why you will see that you had a war with Amaxhosa in the Kei River, etc. Until all of them were displaced and defeated. Then the next thing, it was Natal. The spell of Blood River, defeated the land taken, then it was transferred. And then up to that. Now, you see, so that is why in South Africa, the South Africa of today will produce the kind of people that you have, sorry, it's not here, but I do. Because if you have a government or the ruling class as a political party or the government, not settling the land question, you're going to produce extremists like that. Whether it is going to be him or somebody after, because they're going to say, yes, we have political rights, we have this and this, but we don't have land in our land. So the people of Palestine and the Jews, the government of Israel, must settle the land question in such a way that it is satisfactory for both. Otherwise, it will just remain a problem like that. So I was talking about this issue about anti-Semitism. And I also asked this question to the National Coalition for Palestine about the boycott Israel, the expulsion of Masada, all of these other things. There are other things that were justified, not only to them, to everyone else that, look, the official position of South Africa recognizes the government of Israel. That's one. Two, that the severance of diplomatic relations, South Africa can, at the level of the and economic sanctions, government feels that it doesn't want to do that now. It gave it. But the National Coalition or the BDS is free to leave parliament and engage government on things that can only be done at the level of government. I'm just saying, and they are not comfortable, by the way, when you say that. They are not. And one example they gave, they said, you know, to bring down the apartheid system, at the least, sanctions were applied comprehensively by the USA and everyone else up to a point where the apartheid government could not finance apartheid system. If you remember the history of the sanctions. Now, because then the apartheid system was expensive, then they started the negotiation. So that's what they are saying to parliament, that's what they say. Now, how they call this this is whether you were approached by the PDF or you were approached by the National Coalition for Palestine for a discussion. All of you are South Africans. Because it's clear what side you are on as a Jewish court. And it's clear on whose side they are. No, they can't hide. And you can reasonably suspect that they speak for largely for one side and bad about the other. And yourself there, you largely speak for one side and very little or bad about the other side. Now, the engagement between PDS, the National Coalition for Palestine, and Allah, just, I don't know who will facilitate the discussion, whether you've ever had an engagement like that. Because we may need to advise or South African mediate that you have a discussion like that. That's the point I started with, but it is, in my view, desirable. And also desirable to engage these South African Jews for a free Palestine. Because they themselves are Jews. I don't think they would agree that they become less Jews because they want the Palestinians to be free. You see. We've been saying this to the Afghans, who are saying an Afghaner who doesn't like apartheid becomes less Afghaner. And I can remind you of a few. There's now the Frank Fisher and others. Some were killed like the black. Because they were seen, particularly by the Brother Bond and the National Party, to be less Afghaner. And they argued that, you know what, the lifelong and long-term existence of the Afghaner is when they live side by side with the United States. You might have to come to terms with that. So you must engage the South African Jews for the free Palestine. And then see what comes out of that. And then one day when you discuss, you advise our government and us, we may hold a slightly different children that died in the concentration camps. The fact that the prisoners of war were actually not given food, and two of them that I visited, SMC for Asian cultures, for example, when I was in Mpumalanga. Now, you read this history, you cannot but appreciate that the English actually undermined the Afghans. In fact, they undermined them because for a long time they were controlling the Cape Colony here, which is the Eastern Cape. It is called Cape here from up to the last part, and Natal. That's why the names of the landmarks here are English. Transvaal and Free State was Afghans for many years. When gold and when diamond was discovered, they felt that this gold and diamond is not good for the Afghans. Then there was this war, first one, 1881, then this other one, because it's not good for the Afghans. Then there was also the imposition of the English language under the Afghans. But what happened when they got their freedom? Oppressed the black. Isn't it the same thing that allegedly the Jews are doing? It seems people who experience some oppression at some point don't learn that what they think was not good for them cannot or should not be done to the others. And then you also find it strange, why do they think the others will give up? For me, to the others, I've always asked that question. Why do you think we the black people will give up if you didn't give up? They were very impressive Afghan heroes. This one here, Lord Walter, is one of them. And when there was a British war, there were those who said they defeated and let's give up. And they were called hands hoppers. It's actually hands hoppers. But it was just personalized as hands hoppers. There were those who were going to fight to the bitter end. They were called the battle aiders. Now, why the Afghans thought that the blacks were not going to have battle aiders is quite baffling. And why the state of Israel or the Jewish people don't think that the Palestinians will have their own battle aiders is quite baffling. So when we talk about what the solution that South Africa can give, this context and background is very necessary in other countries. So that we go to the Palestinians and say, look, you're not going to succeed if you think you're going to destroy the state of Israel. The UNO and all humanity is not going to agree with you. Or you, the people of Palestine, can't destroy the Jews or the state of Israel. No one is going to agree with you because this thing is called genocide. I want to end there. I want to propose something here. Whoa. This page is one of two things. One other thing that is contentious is the 1948 Balfour Declaration. Because from time to time it comes up, it seems it's not a subtle question. Where the people of Palestine are saying actually the land that Lord Balfour, gave to the Jewish people, gave them land that belongs to the Palestinians. That is why this matter is not being settled. Or the other one that seems not to be settled are the borders of 1967. Now, we have just seen the map here that you have shown us about Israel. I didn't know that you will bring this map. Then I have got the other map, which was given to us by the PDS, and I think it's 2 years ago. I don't know where me as a South African am going to stand. It shows the borders of Palestine before 1948 and the borders of Palestine up to 1967 and after that, and how Palestine has been shrinking. Now, whether they are manipulating this thing is something else, or you are manipulating this thing, how are we going to know? Because revisionism in history by the victor has always been the issue. I'm sure you have come across Afghans here who are saying that when they got into the land here, they were not people. That's how that is. Do you revise the history? But why did they fight there? Why was there a war in that theater? Over what? Because it was over land. You see, things like that. Now, I can't say you are not providing, the map you are showing us is not providing. I can't say that. I'm just saying, be aware that there are these two maps about the state of Israel and the state of Palestine, I mean the territorial border, and they remain contested. What I don't know is the final adjudicative position of the UN, whether it has finally said, no, look, Israel, this is your area, don't jump this. The jumping international law. Palestine, this is your area, don't jump this. Because otherwise we will keep on being told they got into 5 meters, 3 meters of such a section, and out of ignorance will pass a wrong judgment. The last thing is our leadership has to remember. Given that we write reports to parliament and we write reports to the state, some people approach the speaker, some approach us to make their presentation. And what did we hear a report? Let's see if one day we cannot appeal either to the government or appeal to parliament, or perhaps can be done by act. This committee can be my act, just to facilitate a discussion among these stakeholders. You know, you have a presentation by the National Coalition, you have a national presentation by media, in one room, in one place. You have a presentation by the friend of the South African Jews for a free Palestine. Then you have a presentation by the Jewish board. And then we check whether there are any areas where there are extremely divergent beliefs. We note them, we take them. But we look at those where there's a common ground. For instance, the issue of two states, always everybody talks about that. Now, the constitutional thing is, of course, that by the time it happens, others will have no solution. That's the thing. So, and see if we can come into that. Yeah, I'll come back to you, Honorable Faust. Whether we can come to a discussion like that. You know why? Because I know that, or I feel that when you meet the BDS, the Jewish board feels that they're going to meet that in the future. When we meet you, the BDS of the NCOP feel that we will buy into your position and will not have the other side of the story. And how well is it going to end up? We have seen these things about people who come from other countries, particularly in the US. When they meet us, they say, no, you know the people that you meet, no, those ones are pro-government, they're not amazing. And all of them, they are in South Africa. But the common thing is that they've got a problem with their government. So, as a way forward, I'm going to make that proposal. Look at it as a structure and I think as a committee, let's look at that. And I hope that, you see, there are areas where we're on party position, but there are areas where we must see whether the parliament cannot adjudicate it patiently. Yeah, you know, intervene in a way that must other fellow human beings. And the best can happen at 11, higher than up. If you want to say, bring in the speaker and say so. If you want to say, no, let's bring church leader to facilitate this, we can say so. But let's think about it. if we feel we shouldn't do it, it's fine.
And you are saying it's one of the things that can be done. Honorable John is a John Fass. He's the chairperson of the Trade and Industry Committee. And when we met the National Coalition for Palestine, he actually co-chaired with me. We invited this committee and others because one of the things that was being said was that the sanctions must be imposed, Woolworths must not trade to Israel. Israeli companies will not come and work in South Africa. There are things that actually belong to the government, but these things will be invested in. And the trade and industry is needed to be there. The defense department, the fellow community, had to be there because there were also things that were being raised about security companies going there and all of these things. Or South African, I don't know whether of Jewish origin or whatever, going to trade in Israel, becoming mercenaries, killing the Palestinians, or doing military work, perhaps killing must be wrong. Doing military work and coming back to South Africa, and some of them showing videos about what they've been doing. So we have to bring that committee. Energy and industry, we have to bring that committee. So I'm just giving a context about why she's here and why she was there the other day, and why the committees that we feel that are affected may need to be there. And with that, I want her to ask questions and perhaps also make a comment. Then you can clarify some of the things that I've said. You can leave the others. There are indeed some of them very controversial to you. Like the others were controversial to the others. In the nature of things.
Thank you, Chairperson Masango of the International Relations and Cooperation Committee. Allow me first to apologize to those who have come here. Our committee was informed it was at 3 o'clock, so I have yet to inform our committee that it's not, it has already occurred. But I do wish, I think the last few points that you added, very difficult to me to comment on earlier issues because I wasn't here. But the last few points that you added, I think we're in the nature of long-standing policy. And that is very much that as South Africa, we have always sought the route of reconciliation, which is why South Africa sees itself as a key role player in the peace sort of keeping arrangements, the peace broking, if you like, because the Middle East, in particular the Palestine and the Israeli question, we have been seized with for some time, and it is certainly not our desire to see this get any worse. And there was certainly a concurrence the other day, as the chairperson I think alluded to, that we were concerned with the violation of human rights, etc., that had occurred. And there was, and I was rather pleased when the chairman suggested, look, we need other voices here, because Parliament remains the voice of everyone, those we agree with, those we disagree with. But we cannot change our policy to suit one particular group of people, a nation, a state. Sorry, my apologies. These are, of course, the people now responding to me, telling them that the meeting has already occurred. But I think it would be important for us to, and I'm sure you did this, Chairman, there are some things we can't deal with as Parliament, and I have no doubt you did allude to that. And there are some things which perhaps different committees in Parliament could deal with. But as ourselves, in fact, there were 4 committees, if I'm not mistaken, that were asked by the Speaker to be part of this, but somehow chairman and myself have remained the long-standing survivors, as it were. And the whole idea was, of course, it's a petition. Therefore, we, as Parliament, must hear that petition. But being Parliament, we are also obliged to listen to the people, which we are, I know the chairman is seeking to do. But then, having heard everyone, we are committed to actually remaining in the framework of our policy as government, but also the ruling party in government is the African National Congress itself. And we have never been one to seek to promote aggression in any way whatsoever. And it was alarming to us, and I'm glad you brought up that point, Chairman, that it would appear as if there were some South Africans, or perhaps they weren't South Africans, they held, or rather held dual citizenship. They went across to fight for perhaps the country of the birth or whatever. This is what we had become. We heard. And that was already, that issue is being dealt with by defence, if I'm not mistaken. You reiterated that, Chairman. The other matters on trade and industry. As trade and industry, we have repeatedly said South Africa is a member of many multilateral institutions, not least of all the World Trade Organization. But within that, we have certainly implemented our legislation, as you are all aware. We implemented the legislation on labeling, insisting that what was sourced in Palestine would not indicate otherwise. And I think you're aware of that. But, you know, for me to comment further on this, as I said in the previous meeting, would not be suitable for this particular meeting. I would first want to re-engage the committee, which I'm now the only member here. But it was our full intention to be here. But unfortunately, we were not informed of the change of time. Notwithstanding that, Parliament is under tremendous programme pressures, and I need to say that, so that you don't think things were done deliberately, as it were, but rather, even my own committee is facing that pressure of last-minute changes. So I don't know, you know, what the reasons were, but I do know we face similar pressures in our committee. But suffice to say, South Africa has many, many different groups. Among them, the Jewish people, among them, Muslims, Hindus, Buddhists, Catholics, Christians, a broad range of different faiths. And we so far have managed to earn the reputation of being a tolerant country. And we would want it to remain that way, that we do not seek to divide South Africans within their own country, but rather seek to establish and promote social cohesion, as difficult as this is. But I do want to mention, Chairman, that 2 years ago, in my own area of Johannesburg, there occurred a major Jewish rally in which they publicly denounced what was happening in Israel and indicated, you know, they supported human rights, but tried, you know, and I thought that that was a very good initiative. And I like to think that all the groups in our country, remember they are South Africans. I'm a Catholic, but I'm a South African. You are Jewish, but you are South Africans, and so we have it. And I would not like to think of myself as not a South African. This is where I worked in the struggle. My family, a member, died in the struggle. I'm committed to this democracy.
to you now. I'm sorry, who was presenting on the National Jewish Fund?
Yes. The South African Friends for Jews for a Free Palestine, in their submission to us, and I would want to hear your comment. They say that there is a place called Lubia, and they claim that this place, contrary to what you are saying, that it was bought from the Arab landowners, that in fact the Jewish militia pushed them out, pushed them, and ever since there has been this progressive pushing them out, etc., etc. And a forest was then planted there. You see, we were talking about 240 million trees at that. Then they say there are actually villages under that forest that Israel has been plowing into that. And it claimed, they claimed that Israel says that this land was actually, it was an absentee land. It was like this land didn't have people and then we created this forest. I don't know what to say about this. But you see, the kind of contestations that I was earlier talking about, and I'm happy that these are not the Palestinians who are saying that. These are South African Jews, like you. So, but this is what they're saying about it. As part of showing that the two-state solution might be in your party, things like this continue. Now, when it look, I want to defer to you, and I think you must be given assisted by the team to provide some clarity, and then let's go for lunch. Over to you.
So thank you, Chair, and thank you very much for your insightful and very frank comments in response to our presentation. I'm very pleased that you found the presentation useful, and I wondered, would you like Benji Shulman to respond to your Jewish National Fund question first? That is a specific question. I think I'd like to ask Benji to respond to the Jewish National specific fund specific question, and then I'll deal with your broad brushstrokes and some of the questions and comments that came from the honourable members, and we can take it from there. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. A very pertinent question, and I'm very glad that you asked it. It actually goes to very much where I come from, being a geographer. So I get very excited about maps, including the one that you've been shown by the BDS, and I'd very be happy perhaps at a later time to get into a debate around that so that you could understand the cartography behind the conflict, because it is very interesting indeed. It's actually unfortunate I'd like to be able to have that map to show you exactly what the issue was around Lubia. So I just wanted to clarify a first key thing. The JNF bought land parcels. It was all very buyer-willing seller. And it came that at the end it was about 13% of the land which was declared by the UN to then, if you recall, what the UN's position was that there should be a two-state solution and that there should be a Jewish state and an Arab state. That was the UN's position in 1947. And then, interestingly enough, changes for your edification, and in fact, the Jerusalem should be internationalized, which is no longer a policy proposal. When the UN put these two claims to the two parties, the Jews said that they would be very happy with that arrangement. They believed very strongly that that was a strong outcome. And unfortunately, the Arabs and the Arab Palestinians said that this was not something that they would be prepared to accept. And not only did they reject it, but they in fact rejected it in a violent manner. Okay? Not only were local Palestinian Arabs involved then in an armed struggle, but the surrounding Arab states, like I showed you on the map, also decided to become part of an invading army to see if they could stop this proclamation of the Jewish state. This was now 1947. The reason why I'm telling you this is because Lubia is a place, and it's frequently presented as a village by protagonists such as the BDS. But in fact, in the context of that situation, it was not so much a village as it was a military garrison. Local Palestinians used that village, as did foreign invading armies of Arabs, as a station by which they were using the village to starve out local Jewish communities in that area. And they would frequently, and have self-admitted, if you look at their videos, and I'm sure you've seen articles which are publicly available, self-admit to firing on humanitarian convoys that were moving to assist the local communities to get food and sustenance. In the process of that engagement, the Israeli Defense Force, or what they used to call the Haganah, by virtue that in fact it was a war, decided that there needed to be a military response, as was their right, and they successfully removed that foreign army that was occupying that spot for military purposes. In the process, the villagers decided that they no longer wanted to be part of a war. You often in a war get refugees, as happened, I'm sure, as you know, throughout, as we're seeing in Syria now, many refugees, and they left. And over time, when the dust settled, as to say, whatever it is, that village and the surrounding areas were proclaimed as part of Israel. That area is recognized by the South African government as being Israel. It's recognized by the UN as being Israel. And it's recognized by the free world as being sovereign Israeli territory. There's no question about that. And I think we need to be clear about that. It's a constant issue in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. What do you do with refugees after a war, you know? So some people say they should be absorbed into the Arab countries around them. That's never happened. The Arab countries are never allowed that. Some people say they should be paid compensation for what they lost, both the Jews and the Arab refugees that they all got. And that is something, I think, which many people are speaking about. But that is the context of that village. And I will say to you that, in fact, if you look in that surrounding area, there were many villages that didn't participate in the war, and they still stand to this day. You can go there and see those villages and visit them. I've personally been to those villages and been part of and met the Arab inhabitants. So, you know, I think that's the key thing. Now, the issue of the forest, that area was left for 20 years. It's just vacant. And what happened is that there was a requirement from an environmental sustainability perspective that area was becoming eroded and unsafe for the inhabitants, and they started planting the trees. And in the process, that village, there was a forest that was planted in that area. But many villages, as I say, have not had that process. So I hope that clarifies some of the issues around the forest and the village. And I'd be very happy to answer any other questions that you might have around that issue. Thank you, Chair.
All I can say is that it's not that really.
Forgive me, Chair, I withdraw the point on BDS.
I would just like to make some points in response to the questions and your comments around us as South African Jews and as the South African Jewish Board of Deputies. You made reference to, and I'll make some specific references where the discussion around Jerusalem, land swaps, settlements, those issues. As South Africans and as the representatives of the Board of Deputies, we have no jurisdiction over those discussions. What we're proposing is not solutions in those details. That's for the Israelis and the Palestinians to do. Sorry. Just to say that when it comes to borders and land swaps and Jerusalem and settlements, the South African Jewish Board of Deputies is not meant proposing a view. We are not Israelis, we don't live there, we don't vote there. We are South African Jews who are saying, as South Africans, we have two incredible opportunities in terms of our South African government. Firstly, the experience of our South African government in terms of the transition that we've experienced, and the second point South African government has the ear of the Palestinians, not and the Palestinian leadership, not only Fatah, but Hamas. Hamas have been here, and we're saying we believe that there's very few international governments who have that opportunity with it to do all the things you were saying and to bring the discussion to as informal as you were meant. You, as the South African government, we believe, can say to Fatah, Hamas, we need to talk. We need to get you guys to the table. It's about facilitating people to sit around the table. We can't get involved in the discussion about the detail. We don't know enough about the detail, and as I say, we are non-Israelis. But as South Africans and as South African Jews who have our identity tangled up in the state of Israel, we believe that we have a gift of our government, experience and opportunity, connection, so relationships and a tried and tested model that we believe can work. So the other point you made is about the Coalition for Free Palestine, etc., are on one side and that we're on another side. I want to make clear here, the South African Jewish Board of Deputies is not on any side. We're on the side of peace. We believe that with negotiation and negotiation only will we see the end of this bitter conflict. And that's what we're saying. We're not saying you're right, you're wrong. We don't know. All we know is that the way that it's continuing now, and by deciding that whether you call it anti-Semitism or whatever it is, bringing that conflict and bringing it to, as I say, onto our streets, and creating bad feeling between South Africans is not going to bring a solution to that tragedy. The solution is going to come from the people who live there and their leadership. And that's what I'm suggesting, that we have the gift to offer them, the South African example and the South African influence. Do we have, as the question you asked, any influence on the Israeli leadership? We do, but it's a little limited, but we do. We do have access to the Israeli government, and we have every opportunity. Whenever we are engaging with any form of Israeli leadership, we talk about the South African model. We talk about negotiation, that negotiation is the only thing. But the point that I also want to raise is that I mentioned the visit of Mahmoud Abbas and that we engaged with him and met with him. We know that Hamas visited here. When was the last time that an Israeli government official was invited by the South African government? And the credibility of the South African government is going to come when they engage with both sides on an equal basis and bring the amazing experience and try and test it as the same model to the table and say, chaps, we've done this. It isn't easy. All the examples that you were giving us around Afrikaans people in this country, the British, the Boers, those conflicts and that history is what gives the South African delegation the credibility, unique as it is, to take something to that conflict that no one else, no one in the free world or anywhere else has. And I'm saying we are using the opportunity that we have to engage with our government to say please. That's what we believe. So the other point that I wanted to make was, do we have relationships with diaspora Jewry around the world? We do, and South African Jewish Board of Deputies has a seat on the Executive Committee of the World Jewish Congress, and we use every opportunity, as I say, to propose the model that I've just suggested, that however problematic our situation in this country is, it is still a miracle, and it is still a marvelous story, and it is something that can and should be replicated in disputed territories and in troubled areas around the world. And so what I'm suggesting is that whether it's through your influence to government, we also work closely with the envoys, and just to answer the question that was brought by one of the honourable members saying, what is the model that we have and how do we think that we're going to come up with solutions? And I think you made the point that it's not our role to come with solutions. We don't have solutions, but we do at every opportunity support the engagement and the efforts that President Zuma began by appointing the envoys, We are in direct and close cooperation with the Edward, and wherever they are requiring meetings, where they're having any difficulties in facilitating any of their visits, we do everything in our power and have been relatively successful. So our role is to be as much of a broker as we can, to bring as many messages, but ultimately we believe that the real opportunity rests with our government to change the situation, and by being accessible and giving us this opportunity is presenting us with the confidence that they do want to hear all sides. So I'm trying to think, and just to make the other point about being on all sides, we are passionate about a two-state solution. We have prepared a paper, and I know you have a copy of it, of our position on the Middle East. Two states for two people living side by side. And we believe that's only going to be achieved by people in the position of leadership between those two paid people to negotiate that on their behalf. Possibly, as you said, facilitated by maybe the UN or an outsider of some kind. I don't know if there's anything that I omitted to discuss, but maybe I'd like to ask members of our delegation, maybe Rowan can elaborate. I know Benji, I don't know. Can I leave it to you for now?
Yes, thank you. Also, Honourable Chair, I appreciated your comments about internal dialogue in the South African space. We as a Jewish community and certainly as a Zionist Federation are very open to dialogue with virtually anyone. However, we do have one very critical red line, and that red line is we will only speak to people who believe in the rights of Israel to exist. And there are unfortunately people who have presented to you who, if you ask them that direct question, they'll probably try and evade it and run in circles and try not to answer it. But if you say to them, do you believe in a two-state solution, they will never give you a straight answer. And I think that really emphasizes where they're coming from. And when they, certainly sometimes when they speak about Palestine, they not only speak about territory possibly in the West Bank, but they speak about Palestine being from what they say, the river to the sea. And you often see this in groups where they'll wear t-shirts. For example, there's many groups in South Africa who wear t-shirts that say, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, and you see someone with a machine gun on the t-shirt. These are not just people that we feel that we can engage with, because they're coming from a position that is certainly with regard to violence. They think that a solution will be achieved in a very different way than the South African reconciliation was achieved. And just on the note of that, I think one way to really see if people are legitimate about dialogue and discussion, a great man that I respect is someone called Natan Sharansky. You may have heard of him. He was a great Soviet dissident. He opposed the Soviet Union, and they wouldn't let him leave, and he was put into prison, and he was tortured, and various things happened to him for a very long time in prison. And he came to Israel finally after the end of the Soviet Union. He said there's one simple way that you can determine what is legitimate criticism of Israel, which happens all the time. There's many ways and means you can criticize Israel, and we certainly do as a Jewish community. But he said there's three points that you can always follow that allows you to determine what is legitimate criticism and what is illegitimate anti-Semitism. And he said it's called the three Ds. It's double standards, it's demonization, and it's delegitimization. And if you see any group who obsessively focus on this one issue, they obsessively focus and disregard every other issue in the world, and they delegitimize Israel, they question its right to exist. I've got a list here that goes on for 34 pages of disputed territories around the world. These people will never ever mention this information because it's only relevant to them to target the one and only Jewish state. I've got a list here of walls. There are over 65 walls around the world. That were barriers or security barriers that people never bring to the attention of this kind of committee. And I think it's very important that we do take cognizance of the fact that there are people we're very happy to dialogue and debate with, and people that call for reconciliation. I think it's been very clear in this presentation that we strongly support a two-state solution, we strongly support dialogue, we strongly support peace, but we do have to have partners that also support that, and as soon as we find we are desperate to talk to those partners. And that's just the basic comment. I do value very much your comments and your questions, and thank you very much.
Just in terms of picking up from where Rowan left off around anti-Semitism, you raised the point about whether some of the slides that I had flouted were representing, and I think Honourable Member mentioned that it's not necessarily anti-Semitism, and I agree with you. Israel and frustration around Israeli politics need never be anti-Semitic. What I was trying to demonstrate, and I think I demonstrated sadly quite graphically, that often it has become so. So it's not to say that it should, they are not interchangeable, but it has unfortunately been our experience, and more recently it's gathering momentum, that if you hate Israel, you can hate Jews for free. And that's what we're trying to say is unacceptable. That when we see rallies like this and swastikas and kill the Jew, and 3 weeks ago on this campus, kill Jews. So it's not to suggest that we are, and we do live in a country that has remarkably low anti-Semitism levels. And we appreciate that, and we live free as Jews, we live an incredibly full and rich religious existence. But unfortunately, what's happening in so many of these anti-Israel forums is that they unravel very quickly into anti-Semitism. I'd like to ask Jamie if you can make some comments on that regard, and then we'll close our comments, because I know you also have literally a plane to catch.
Chairperson, you earlier referred to rising radicalism in South African politics and the causes of it. And I just wanted to call to attention that there is also a voice of rising radicalism in the conversation that we're seeing around Israel, which would like to call to your attention. And at a later stage, maybe you can ask this question to the interested party. Because if you find that people are playing the player and not the ball, you need to be cautious about why is that tactic particularly being chosen. Now, in this room, you've heard a presentation from Zionists about why they hold that particular political ideology and why it's something that they want to advance. Now, Zionism is a political ideology like any other school of thought, but what you will find is that there are people now who are using the label Zionist and using the identity of people who self-describe as Zionists as targets of attack. So now what you will see is that people are saying that the Zionists must fall, the Zionists this and the Zionists that. And I'm sure you've heard those kind of conversations maybe even outside of this room. The challenge with that is that it's not a discussion about the ideology of Zionism, whether or not the Jewish people have a legitimate claim to a homeland and whether Jerusalem is its capital. It's an attack on their personhood. And whenever people attack your personhood over the way that you are thinking about a particular idea or entity, that in and of itself is a form of anti-Semitism. It's nuanced. It's not as blatant as kill the Jews. But that is the seed which leads to the conversation which goes to kill the Jews. Because first it's the Zionist, not the idea, the Zionist must fall, and then comes the conversation around kill the Jews. And this is, I think, if you were looking at the conversation you were having around the Afrikaners and the distinctions that they began to make themselves in the Anglo-Boer War, you can see that the identification was on the person and not on whether or not they thought the tactic would work. So instead of talking about is it legitimate for us to fight to the bitter end, or is it legitimate for us to raise our hand, people were saying these ones don't want to fight to the bitter end, or these ones want to put up their hand. And when you begin to categorize people, you know, you are compartmentalizing them for the specific purposes of a negative sentiment. And that negative sentiment in a volatile environment, I think those videos, they were self-indicative. I mean, some of the people may have been maybe more emotional than they normally would when they were in a lecture hall. But if that's an extent that they can go to in front of a camera, I don't think it would be prudent of us to assume that all of them were just overreacting and overexcited. There are definitely some of them who said it and meant it. And whenever you have that culture of conversation happening, I think as custodians of society, we need to be cautious to de-escalate that, considering that we are living in a world really where radicalism is becoming an everyday occurrence. Thank you.
Chairman, I just want to close off, it's to really thank you for this opportunity that attention and your questions and your engagement. And I really hope that this presentation has cleared up some matters that were raised during committee meetings while I was sitting there in terms of who is the Jewish community, what are our interests, what is our connection to the state of Israel, the land of Israel. And I hope that it's been made clear that our connection on a religious cultural level is bigger than any one government of the day. At the moment it's right next to be left with the democracy there. It's about any particular government policy. And as a South African, I just want like to commend our government. I've grown up in South Africa. I have the South African spirit of dialogue, of conciliation. What I've witnessed, you know, I'm 33, I was 11 in 94, what I've witnessed in our country and the role that we can play in terms of coming together. I approach it from the same perspective as other South Africans, where one life, any life is one life too many. We want peace. We want resolution in the area. We want it to come better life for both sides, for all sides, for all people there. And within a two-state solution, there is no pro-Palestinian or pro-Israeli approach. We are, on the South African level, negotiating solutions on all of those tough issues that you raised for both sides, but within a negotiated framework. And that is why when you ask what are suggestions, when South Africa is trying to play a role in mediating those, there is a framework for those discussions. Where South Africa, as Mary mentioned, where South Africa has that edge, that we have the ear of both sides. We have the ear of the Palestinians. We have the ear of the Israelis. If we can come across as honest brokers with no bias to either side, to bring both sides to the table. And so we applaud the government's approach for a two-state solution. We applaud the work of the envoys. We applaud that approach, and we support that in any way that we can move this discussion forward. We are there, and we want to engage with anybody who falls. Just to say also that our communal organizations, we're not all of one mind. We're a broad community with people on all sides of the political spectrum. Where we fit in is within this representative framework of people who want to identify themselves with the Jewish community. So we do represent that elected body. People who fall outside of that, they're entitled to their opinions, and that's 100% fine, and the community must hear from everybody. So when we speak on behalf of these people, we speak on behalf of people where we declare uncategorically we are not pro either side, we are pro both sides. We would like to see the resolution. We support the South African government in this regard. And I really hope that has come across that we are willing to engage on all the tough issues. We don't represent the Israeli government. We don't represent any particular lobby interest. We come as South Africans with our connection to Israel, and we want to try and facilitate that relationship and South Africa's role in trying to facilitate that and bring it to both sides. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I made a proposal to yourselves, honourable members, that as you can see, certain things belong to government and others do belong to parliament. But I don't know whether it's a recommendation to government or a recommendation to parliament. But of course, if we make a recommendation to parliament, it's why we speak. Whether all of this political and civil society, not other structures which are in South Africa, about the Middle East, can actually be hosted somewhere under a particular mediation. Just for a discussion. And if two or three things constantly were to emerge there, then we can let South Africa present this to the UN, or the special envoy can present this on both sides. Look at this. What about this? What about this? Because if South Africa must play a mediation role, one of the things is, this is what is common about you. I saw one of the things that were presented by President Zuma in Burundi. It was one of the things that is plaguing that country. Besides the politics, is being about Hutu and about being Tutsi. And that other regional players, in fact, but let me not know, I don't know, South Africans were alone here, Uganda, the chance is that Yoweri Museveni is actually a Hutu. And he does play as an allegation as destabilizing role in other countries, so he wants his people to be. So, things like that, but what I'm saying is that when you see things like that, even here in Africa, and there are others that you met from the DRC some other time,
and what they're saying about each other's ethnic group or regions, and that you always felt that, hey, you know, it's good to be South African. But South Africa must assist other people.
So I was just saying, can you speak to that so that we write it and then we do it, or perhaps we feel, look,
Okay, I think we would support that idea if it took a step backwards, in other words, it became talks about talks. Because even with all of those groups, there would be a sort of a defensiveness and people feeling threatened that you're going to come out with some conclusions from that meeting. But talks about talks and the conclusions that come out are really around how do we move towards the talks that we're supposed to be having. And so I'd say if we take that step backwards, we've got a greater chance of gradually bringing everybody on board with an intention about becoming, being able to talk to each other. Because that's the thing. We don't, without it being a manipulative thing that we're trying to make people agree with each other, we actually want people to respect each other's right to have their opinions and how can we go forward with those opinions. So I say yes, as long as it's a step back.
I think with that, again, in conclusion, on behalf of the committee, Honorable Kalapa had to leave because of engaged in the prior arrangement with his flight. And the same challenge was doing by the hotel. But that's not the reason. Earlier on, I said thank you for agreeing that the meeting be held earlier. The initial meeting would have taken place at 4 and 3 o'clock with the pressures of people flying out. I don't think the discussions and the clarifications would have been this much longer and this much deeper. We want to thank you for the earlier meeting, but also to thank you for the presentations. Now, whether we agree or not, every person, all structures, all organizations, all churches, we must hear them out. Must hear them out. Because everyone is important. And so, and with that, I think that Parliament has been enriched. And I wouldn't say it's an omission on our part, because it was not arranged that way. But it could have been good if the other committees much.